or sometimes they just laugh at everything you
Anything,
say.
Anything, dude.
Like they're promoting a
My
movie.
My back hurts.
Oh, speaking of backs, I mean, have you heard of the Saati mattress, bro? It's good for the it's good for the backs.
You tell me. Tell your old lady.
we promoted that mattress. Now everybody wants to promote on the show, man. Not knowing how to do it. Talking about, I'll give you a loaf of bread. We don't even know what to charge for advertising on our podcast.
It's a beginning.
It's a beginning. What's up with Whoopi Goldberg, bro, on The View? You ever watch The View?
A little bit, dude. A couple little segments with her. What's up? Is she going crazy again or what?
I don't know, man. Her clothes are.
She's always wearing like those fucking, Eddie Murphy and Holy Man, dog. Those big old drapes and shit, those shawls.
Yeah, or she wears like those. Sometimes she wears like nice shoes, but her pants look like MC Hammer pants or something.
Like weird genie shit, fool.
Yeah, and there are Cristela's on the show sometimes. What's up, fool? What's up, fool?
Chilling, dog. What's cracking?
Podcast with Rodrigo Torres here.
Yeah, man.
Giving out the yeah mans for free.
Complimentary. What's cracking, fool?
Chilling, bro. How was did you have fun in Sacramento, man?
It was awesome, fool. It was cool, man. Two shows just fucking blasted one right after another, dude. You know, quick. And then go up there and come back to L.A., dog. But it was cool, dog.
Birdman Excited. Showed up?
Hell yeah. Dabbing it up, dog.
So you like dabbing?
Dude, I didn't do it this weekend. It's just too, sometimes it's too hard on the chest, fool. It's like when fucking Suge Knight collapses in court. Ugh! But I like it because it's different, dog. It's not like, it's just different, fool. It just takes your body to another level. You levitate, dog.
So is Dab Queen, bro.
Dabbing with no furniture in there.
Dabbing, huh? So I trip on like some women get famous on Instagram by just doing dabs on with their underwear on.
Hell yeah, just titties and smoke, fool.
Shit, I imagine if I start posting dabs with my underwear on, people start calling the cops, reporting my photo, start trolling me.
It's Popeye from Blood and Blood
what's
Out.
Up with Mr. What's up with Queen Dab Flabs?
Dabbing panzas, dog.
Yeah, man, so I feel bad. Some of these girls on Instagram, they post up real photos of themselves, but then you look around, man, they got no furniture.
A Del Taco cup right there in the corner, huh, fool?
Oh, that Del Taco cup, bro, was a movie that's not even playing anymore, man.
But, dude, some of these chicks be taking weak-ass little ribs, dog. They're not even, come on.
I know, like, some of these girls, they do dabs on Instagram, and they hold the air for a little bit, and then...
Well, I take dabs, dude, like I'm at the fucking buffet at Shakey's, dog.
Shit, man, I do dabs, and I hold it in, and I exhale, and then my chest feels like pressure's on top of me.
Hell yeah, I feel like a horse kicked my ass, dog.
So take, what's up, fool?
Nothing, dog. Taking big old mojo dabs. Eh?
So, man, were a lot of people heckling you at the show?
No, it was just crazy. The first show, fool, it was just like, because people are into the podcast and shit. Fool's all yelling right away. Yeah, man. Yeah, man. Yeah, man. But it's cool. Fool, just fucking go through it. Fools were excited, dog. They're all happy and shit. Haven't been there, you know, in days. I haven't seen your ass in days, dog. But, you know, a lot of big-ass Mexicans up in Northern California,
I know,
dog.
Man. It's like...
Huge-ass fools.
It's like if you're nervous about the show, man, and then you start getting more nervous because you start looking at Instagram, you start seeing these crazy motherfuckers coming to the show. Like I saw this one guy.
Deep.
I saw this one guy in a limousine with a big on Instagram
in style
with a bottle of Patron and with his homies, and he goes, "Man, limousine, made up his own word, limousine to the Felipe Esparza show." And I say, damn, man, these are already fucked up, man.
It's an event, fool. I mean, dude, fools are excited, dog. They want to get fucked up. They want to see you. They want to take pictures, dog.
Then I see him at the show, man. That fool pulls out a badge.
He's a cop.
He's a cop.
Off duty, dog.
He's a cop from Stockton Police, but he's ready to put a fool in a chokehold.
Hell yeah, dog. Make a cholo cry again, dog.
What up, man? Let's give some shout outs real quick. Shout out before everybody turns off the radio show.
Yeah, man.
Before everybody turns off the podcast and goes to another podcast. Shout out to All Things Comedy, who hosts our podcast. April 1st is our first live podcast at the Ice House in Pasadena. All of our proceeds will go to All Things Comedy, or will be donated to All Things Comedy, or we're going to give it to All Things Comedy. I'm in Pittsburgh tonight. Pittsburgh, PA, baby. The Steel Mills. I'm chilling out here with Chris Doran.
What's going on, bro?
And at the Improv, through Sunday, March 29th. I'm at the Improv in Pittsburgh, man. Anybody wants some big steel? Come over, man. April 9th through 12th, Orlando Improv. I'm over there in Orlando, April 16th through the 18th at Joker's in Richland, Washington. April 24th and 25th at Home Fields in Miami. May 1 and 2. May 1st and 2nd. The Mayweather-Pacquiao fight. I'll be at the Mayweather-Pacquiao fight. Not really, man. I don't have no ticket for that shit. I can barely afford a room. And I'm going to be at the Triple B backstage bars and billiards, baby, in Las Vegas. I'm back with Rodrigo Torres and a featured act to be announced. Hopefully somebody with a good car that'll do the show for 70, that'll do the whole show for 75 bucks.
Yeah, man.
Anyways, what's up, fool? Yeah, man. What's up, man? We have our guest here, man. This guy's a legend.
Hell yeah.
Hell yeah, man. I've known this guy forever. We've run into each other a lot. He was on Last Comic Standing, people.
Yes, sir.
Season 5. All right? This guy, man, when I was on Last Comic Standing on Season 5, I was standing next to Jeff Dunham, and I was waiting for my name to be called. I was waiting for my name to be called. And on television, they put the camera right next to my face in my big, big ass hair. And then they go to Jay London and they go, Jay London, you're going to Las Vegas. What's up, Jay London?
Nice to see you. This is a refreshing moment with great energy here. I hope I don't subdue your energy.
Nah, what's up, brother? How you doing, Jay?
Good.
What's up, Jay?
Good.
The great Jay London.
Jay nice London, baby.
Thank you.
You get closer to this?
Yes,
yeah,
I
so
can.
People can
yes,
hear you.
Yes, I can. Yes, I can.
So what's up, Jay London, man?
Well, I'm hearing all the dates you have, and I'm starting to internally get jealous. it's great. That's great that you're a viable, active subject out there in the world of comedy.
Hell yeah.
Yeah.
So how you been, man?
Doing fine. I'm doing great. I don't want to you could have a lot of downtime with me, so keep talking, man. I have a lot of downtime. Fair to middling. Good things. My greatest claim to fame in the last so many is opening up for Louis C.K. a few shows here at the Comedy Store and Steve Allen Theater, and I couldn't be happier. It's a feeding. I got a good feeding. Are you into feedings, man? It was a big feeding.
Hell yeah! What was that like opening up for Louis C.K.?
Riddled with tension because he doesn't like an opener. You just have to go up there. You know, bang.
Cold.
It. Cold, very cold.
So, no intro, right? Just go up there?
No, the intro was there.
Ladies and gentlemen, yeah. Jay London.
Yeah, that's it. So you have to really prove your chops, and it made me feel good that I can retain and keep the status of a pro in some way. A good feature act. Go ahead.
How much time did you do?
Oh, that's just it. I did about 8-10 minutes. So, you know. after 10 minutes, they're going to see holes. There's definite holes in my hand.
They see the 10 minutes, they think he's solid.
Yeah, then after that starts.
You said thank you.
Yeah, well, I kill it with that sometimes.
You know, you will never see me again.
That's right. Yeah, you won't. You won't. Yeah.
Where did you start out comedy, Jay London?
I started out, actually, I used to drive a cab in New York, and for some reason, I used to go to minority-based clubs. You know, I hold the record at Showtime at the Apollo for getting booed off. You know, things like that. For some reason, I went to that venue. So I actually started off in black and emporiums in Harlem, driving a cab, parking, and doing my thing. And it's been a nice long trek. Because they're hardcore, you know. I've had people, you know, in that side of that environment go, you know, don't even try. You know that one?
Yeah.
Don't even try.
Don't go there.
I even started. So I got a good base there, and you know, and I started, and I just would do my 3 or 4 sets a week or 5 and just continually try to keep growing. I think you level up at some time, but yeah. Go ahead, please.
Was it a tough crowd for you, like being dead? Did you start off deadpan? Or you're
no,
a physical comedian?
No, I start
comedian.
Off as a regular. No, I start off as a, hey, how you doing? Where you from?
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
I started off as a regular.
Yeah. It didn't fly. No.
I started off as deadpan.
You did?
Yes, because I used to watch Steven Wright, you know, and I said, well, this guy could go up there, you know, and he's shy, because I thought I was a shy guy until I met the ladies at the bathroom.
This one. Lingering, dog.
It would belie you because you have this tremendous energy.
I was just suppressing the energy like the David Banner the one day, man, after bombing too much.
Bombing makes you good. I'm sorry to interject.
Go ahead.
You get better in your first 3 years if you bomb a lot. It gives you muscle, inconspicuous muscle.
Yeah, because it was tough times. Bombing, man. I used to watch you. When I showcased for Mitzi at the Comedy Store, she made me a regular after auditioning, 18 times? It keeps getting higher.
Yeah. She was very magical to me, man. She embraced me big time. I mean, that's... I got here and I got spoiled right away.
She liked you on the first trial?
First to second jump.
When did you get to L.A.?
1999, 2000.
Because we used to see him a lot in 2001. We used to go to the Comedy Store a lot. We always see you do the little sets. You'd hide behind the little curtain.
That's right. It's really a...
Dublin's?
Dublin's. Yeah, dude. Jay Davis. And again, you know, it's all those things that are collectively get you where you want to go. Or hopefully. That's it.
Did you, one time you and I were talking at the Comedy Store, and you said that you started off as a boxer.
No, I used to be a sparring partner.
A sparring partner,
yeah,
right.
And that was a misprint. I never turned pro because I have a deviated septum, and I had to have it removed, and I wasn't that good. And I should have been fighting at 147 pounds instead of 160. No reach, so I used to take a lot of beatings.
That's funny you say. You said no reach. We had a boxer here on the last podcast. We had Roy Pitbull Tapia.
Oh,
he's a young fighter out of Boyle Heights. He's 10-0.
Yeah, because I watch a lot of fights out of Guadalajara, and
I know you're. You told me one time you're a big boxing fan.
Telemundo on a Saturday night. Yeah. I should be working, but I watch Telemundo. Go back to that. I'm using a hook, a reference. But I saw Canelo when he was 16 years old. Canelo Alvarez, and a lot of young fighters, Eric Morales when he was, you know, and I just loved it. It was just the tension, very close to comedy in a way, too. You have to be prepared.
How long were you a sparring partner for?
Oh, for about 5-6 years off and on.
What did that pay?
Sometimes you get $25 a round. I had the great privilege to train with a fellow named Emil Griffith, who was 6-time world champion, and... you know, and under the tutelage of a fellow named Gil Clancy, who passed away too. And, you know, and I was a southpaw, and at the time, he was going to fight him. It was an elimination bout between him and Alan Minter, and they fought at Wembley Arena. So I had to train with him, Tom the Bomb Bethea. Some of them were unheralded, you know, that you would only know from Australia or New Zealand because they fought a lot out of the country. That was it. No big deal. I wasn't really good.
So you never fought pro, just sparring?
A lot of sparring. And you know, I was in the Golden Gloves, lost. Silver Gloves, Latino Gloves. Always losing. But never got but never get knocked out. You know?
That's what's up. Yeah. Keep on surviving like a roach.
Yeah. Never getting really taken a pummeling. But, you know, I was able to lean on you, put my chin in your...
In your shoulder?
No, in your collarbone.
And annoy you.
Yes.
Annoy you, dog, in the ring. Yeah. He clasped me to the ropes. Get him, Jay. Annoy him.
Step on your feet. because being a lefty, a lot of lefties, when they lead, they step. I mean, most fighters are righty, so when you step, it's usually annoying to step on that front foot.
There's a lot of those things you mentioned, stepping on feet, putting your shoulder on your collarbone.
Yeah.
There's a lot of tricks that a lot of Mexican boxers use too, like overextending the elbow, hitting you
Yeah, getting inside, using that, you know, using your forehead as a billy goat kind of thing, you know, you know, trying to bust open somebody's eyebrows because it's the easy way to bust somebody up is through, you know, this area here. So I tried it.
What are some of the dirty tricks in boxing that you've seen? Like, billy goating. I like that billy goating.
Or getting inside and using forearms to get inside. And when the referee's on that side, you can't see what's going on here. You know, maybe try to hit real low under the, not under the belt, but, you know, under the hip, by the hip. But, and I only learned so much, and It teaches physical respect for yourself. At least I hope so.
What do you think about the next fight, Mayweather Pacquiao? Who do you think?
You know,
it's our business.
I'm not that I'm an authority on it. You know, I so many times previous when he fought in Macau and he beat Ortiz, I forget who he beat, and then he fought this unheralded guy who beat this Russian fighter, and I said, wow, you know. He was ending up in hospitals after fights. When he fought Marquez, he got knocked out brutally.
Yeah.
You know, and then he fought somebody else. He had earlobe trouble. So I just, you know, I for some reason, with all the, not that I'm downgrading him, because anytime he could be a 5-6-time world champion. But I look for an upset. I don't even know who's favorite, to tell you the truth. Who's favorite? Mayweather. Big time?
Yeah, I think so.
For some reason, I just see some kind of fluky kind of thing going down.
Yeah, the pay-per-view is going for $100 million. No, $100.
He's getting $120 million, Mayweather, and he's getting $80
million.
Wow. I would do it for $50 right now. I'd take punches from them.
Definitely. That'll be awesome if there's a fucking upset, though.
Yeah, I just see something freakish happening. And again, he's a lefty or righty, and I look for him to come out of the chute real quick.
Who's a lefty? Pacquiao, the lefty?
Yeah, southpaw. Yeah.
Oh, he's a southpaw?
And I look for him to come out real quick.
Fast.
Yeah, he has to.
I see Mayweather fighting Pacquiao like Sugar Ray fought Duran and Marvin Hagler. Hitting
pecking
him
away.
Running.
Pecking away. You know, it's just that, you know, you get old overnight, too. Your skin starts to change as you get older in your 30s and all, you know? No, seriously. And you start to slice open, you know? So
it's not as smooth then.
Yeah, I just noticed little bags under his eyes. You know, that little age differential.
Yeah.
And you can't get old overnight. And he has fine ladies around him all the time. And
Manny Pacquiao?
No, Mayweather.
Mayweather.
And you can't be a fighter and a lover at the same time. It ain't going to work.
That's an interesting theory, dude.
It's like Mickey, man. Like Mickey said, man, women weaken legs.
You know, I remember a fellow named Carlos Monzon who was middleweight champion, and guys, sometimes you meet your what was the question? I forgot the question. What's the question?
Women weaken legs.
No, it takes away that intensity. If you're up in Bear Lake and all, you're not with your lady for 3 or 4 months, you're going to get a little animalistic and edgy and nervous, and that's what you need, I think, just to be ready. But you guys like Ray Robinson, you know, he did his thing the night before that early morning or whatever.
Can you get hurt really bad being a sparring partner?
Nah, you're wearing headgear like that, unless someone clips you with an uppercut, because there's nothing here to really cover you, unless you got your hands up here, but... You know, you can get clipped with an uppercut, or somebody can catch you. Excuse me. This is a very vulnerable part of the knockout process, the top of the, you know, top of the skull here in that area, or ear. You can get wobbled. Wobbled. I call it wobbled.
So you started comedy in New York or Los Angeles?
Started out in New York in 1986 at a place called Jimmy's Comedy Alley. And as I said, I ventured into these minority-like clubs. I started out where... what's his name? The inception of rap, really, at a place called The Fever in the Bronx. And I used to drive a cab, and a guy who did White Lines.
Well, Grandmaster Flash.
Grandmaster Flash and Starsky and all them. And then I parked my cab for their talent night, and then I came out. I had no more cab. They robbed the meter. They robbed everything. So I learned, you know, after that, hey, go where you belong maybe sometimes.
But you saw Grandmaster Flash.
Yeah. Yeah, him and all the beginning, you know, the Sylvia Robinson. She was actually the founder of hip hop and rap in a way. And you know the song Pillow Talk?
Yeah,
that's Sylvia Robinson, and she migrated to becoming a record mogul.
So you were there in the beginning of hip hop,
86, man. And look out
with Mally Mel.
Well, and look out for me maybe because. I did a song many moons ago. I was involved with music, just writing whatever, you know, very artistic, way out there, beats with under the tutelage of Herbie Hancock when he had Rocket back in 80-something, for real. I wrote a song that, and I got a call from my friend Steve Brown, 15, not just the other day. I wrote a song called Some Get the Elevator, Some Get the Shaft. And it's real... And it's a real high-powered late-night dance kind of music. But it's archaic from the beats that were done in 88 and whatever. So, You know, we'll see. Maybe I have a. Maybe that's when my life will. You know, you'll plant seeds sometimes. Years later, bang.
Hell yeah, Jay London, yeah, dog.
So what else? How does the song go?
Some get the elevator, some get the shaft. You stepped on my accelerator, so I gave you the gas. But it's done with the, you know, remember Double Dutch Bus?
Yeah,
Double Dutch Bus. So it's some get the elevator,
some get the shaft.
Yeah, yeah. I can't let it out yet.
You heard it here first, people.
That's right.
Some get the elevator, right. some get the shaft. Shaft. MC Jay London,
biatch. And Steve Brown.
And Steve Brown.
Can't mention that name. Okay, please.
So you started open micing. So you know, Roger Paul.
Know of Roger Paul? You know, he reminds me of the Brill Building, which discovered the Carole Kings and the great early rock and roll. Yeah. You know, the Shirelles and all the 60s stuff.
The Big Bopper.
Yeah, and he reminds me of the last guys on old Broadway, meaning the Pat Coopers.
Yeah.
You know, Pat Cooper.
Yeah.
These great comics who used to walk down the streets of Broadway. So I'm glad to see he's still around. Yeah. Tell him I said hello. I know.
I met him because there was a guy that we hung out with. What's his name?
Phil Selman.
Phil Selman.
The infamous.
Infamous.
Yeah,
dryest.
He discovered, actually, I believe, Eddie Murphy or along those lines. No,
my
not for
God.
Real.
You're on
today.
You're on it, man.
Yeah.
You know it. All that shit.
You know, I like him because he's been pining and trying to find his footing for so many years. And he has that tenacity, not to quit. As far as, you know, getting an opportunity. I don't mean in a besmirching way.
Yeah, man. Rodrigo, like, loved the pot he gave him, too.
Oh, my God. That's so many fucking seeds.
He had to hire a bird.
Yeah, I don't know the background of that. That's off air. We'll talk about that.
But, yeah, but you're right. He did say he started with Eddie Murphy. Yeah.
The Dice Man.
Chris Rock owes him money.
He gave him all kinds of chances, and there he was always in the background. And then he became a booker. And now he's still out there doing, you know, and he does a strong job because of his years of being in it. Like, he's a 30-year man, I think.
Wow.
You coined a new term.
Did you go for him?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I met him at Roger Paul's office.
Yeah, 16, whatever.
And then when I went to New York, the first time I went there was in 98. Mm. It was some show called Que Locos, and I went to the comic strip.
Yeah, great Lucian Hold.
Yeah, Lucian. Yeah, and
I
met the man, and he told me you were a great guy, and you were funny guy.
Lucian?
Yeah,
really?
'Cause there was a photo of you there.
Yeah, Lucian
at that
Hold,
club. He had the beard. He was a real skinny man.
Yeah. He looked like Robert Goulet a lot.
Yeah.
But he...
You started that little tiny club?
Well, me and Rob, Rick Shapiro, we graduated. I call it graduating that night there, you know. And I see guys like Louis C.K. and now Mike Sweeney's the head writer of the Conan O'Brien show. And they all came out. We all came out of that time. Sarah Silverman, Kevin James. And I see how they all catapulted and went to the forefront. And here I am. Go ahead.
On the What's Up Fool podcast.
Yeah, no.
But you were last comic standing. You were runner-up, second place.
No, I came in fourth, man.
Oh, I thought you were second.
No, I vied against Alonzo Bowden. He beat me out. No, I never came in no second.
But you went on a tour?
Went on a 30-city tour. Because as you were mentioning, the list you're going on, some of those clubs in Pittsburgh I had gone to and all. And it kind of altered my life and my, if I'm not trying to be cute here, my food style, my food intake.
Yeah.
I used to be kind of, you know, wiry. Now I would eat. So the only thing I got from my years of doing Last Comic Standing tour was gaining weight. That's about it. But it was great. It changed my life. Yeah.
So the tour for you guys was 35 cities?
So they're like that 25 to 30 cities.
Mine was 80. We did 90 cities.
Never saw that.
Like we were gone from September, I would say September, all the way to February.
Damn. Yeah, no, I guess because that was basically the inception of, so it didn't have all those, you know, the same places, or the hot property that it was. I guess you were in a hotter time.
What was it like when you were on, man? When people started watching you on TV, were they like, was your phone ringing? Jay Leno, is that you?
No. What's very surreal is how powerful that little TV tube can transpire, transpose, whatever. And,
yes.
And it's surreal. Years later, I still even get stopped. And that's pretty far. So it did change my life. And you get the respect. You know, you trudge for a long time, and then you finally, you know.
Yeah, that's the best part.
Yeah, the respect of it all.
When the best part is when people who actually were rooting for you, I'll call to you, you know what? I never watched the show, but I was watching it because you were on it, Jay London.
Yeah. And the all walks of life.
All of them.
That you've hit.
Like, you made that. I would meet people, just a regular guy walking down the Grand Central Market, and he would walk up to me, my man. I never watched the show, but every Saturday, every Wednesday, I watched to see if you still made it.
Yeah, see?
I didn't vote for you, but I was pulling for you.
Yeah. Well, that's called the soothing aspect.
Yeah.
It's very nice. I think most comics, or half of comics, have an emaciated ego where they need feedings.
Yeah.
You know, and you get your feedings along the way. And I still get a little feeding here.
I was in your corner, Jay.
Thank you. Feedings. It's all about feedings.
How did you start off going from being the hey, how you guys doing to the guy you are now on stage?
This is a simple one for me because it's one of the high points in a way. I did a place. I mentioned Jimmy's Comedy Alley. This place no longer there in Bayside, Queens. And who was the great king of the roast that used to do the roast? Latino. He, God rest his soul.
Greg Giraldo.
Yeah, Greg Giraldo.
I remember on a rainy night about. This is a long time ago. He came through those doors on a Wednesday night. We used to do Comedy Hell with Rob Bartlett, who did all the voices for I Miss in the Morning. And they wanted me to do their New Year's. I became the hot kid on the block, so to say, there. And so they started to mock me and whatever. But there was a piano on the stage with the wing open, you know, the wing. And it was going so bad, I asked somebody if they could put my head into the piano, the thing in there, and crush it like a cashew to, you know, to take the piano and whatever. And since that time, I swear to God, since that time, that's when I started to do the self-deprecating humor, which I kind of think it can run its course, too. Got to find other avenues.
Crush it like a cashew.
I swear to God. So I started self-deprecating humor, the thing with the coat. One time I worked, if I may say, like a mob-oriented club in the Bronx, New York, and I had to use the bathroom, and by accident the zipper went. So I asked this young lady for her lavalier, her jacket.
Yeah.
And since that day, I was
very Victorian.
I was always carrying a jacket. So that's with material in it and whatever. And I could tell you a bigger story than that, if I may, how security conscious we are these days. I don't know if you ever saw my notes, but
yeah.
You can't really read them. So I got stopped by the TSA at Kennedy Airport, and they thought that I had all this, you know, covert material as far as...
Covert. And he's into espionage now.
They thought maybe, because at that time there was a shoe bomber. And since I look like the shoe, whatever. Yeah. Another story.
So what happened? They stopped you?
Oh, yeah, big time.
It's a decode. What does this mean? Thank you over and over.
Yeah, the Da Vinci code over here.
Yeah. And I got stopped for a good 15 minutes.
You will never see me again.
Yeah.
What's going on here?
What is this? How you come back, you swim only 4 years.
Yeah. And I, Maryland one time, early thing there, and they took me into the puffer room. You ever go into the puffer?
No, in TSA, no.
Puffer. It's to check for gun residue.
Oh, yeah, I've been to there.
They wipe that with the flashing. It looks like a photo booth. And that's my highlights on the downside of traveling. That downside. And that's it. Please.
So you're working now? You still go to the comedy store?
When I was there, I have to get a little Jewish on this. But it was like, oi, you know, I don't want to mention names.
Oi vey.
Yeah, oi vey is right, with emphasis on the V. And bang, they embraced me and all, man. I can't get arrested there. Can't get arrested. I can't get arrested. I don't know if you run your course. That's what I mean. You know, a very infamous super executive type once said, hey, London, there's plenty of addicts living in the hills. Meaning, you can get caught up in a web here. Not that I'm trying to emphasize here, but, It's a very disheartening thing when you become a hot commodity, then you're like dropped or whatever.
Yeah.
You run your course here, and you better be advantageous on capitalizing. Because I can't get arrested. I can't get arrested, but I don't want to get arrested. And that's it. I do a lot of benefits. I shouldn't talk about benefits.
Yeah.
Skid Row, Lamp Community, VA Hospital down here in Westwood. And for me, that's a nugget. You know, it's a nugget.
And I got to say something. Every Thanksgiving at the Laugh Factory or Christmas, only two people kill it on stage. It's Jay London kills it and me.
Well, with me,
kill it, man.
Well, you know how the guy said the last time? I thought you were one of us.
What are you doing on that stage?
Yeah,
get over here.
I didn't know that. I didn't know you do comedy. I thought
they looked at Jay London and said, well, how come you didn't show the sign up list?
Yeah. So, you know, again, doing benefits is very soothing, and it's collectively nice. Good aura, you know, try to have aura. Good aura, positive.
Sometimes, man, I see you at the same audition I go to.
Not anymore, you don't.
No?
That's my problem. I have trouble. I think when you have a manager and you have, you know, I'm not saying I have an intimacy problem, but the authority sometimes shies me away. I get a little afraid. I have to get management to get out there.
So you're not with Maverick anymore?
No, Nish.
Nish?
That's more German, meaning no. No, because I was inactive, man. I was getting sent out.
You were sent out?
No. So, you know, great guy, Mr. Schachter, was very instrumental and very nice to me. You know, but, you know.
So you didn't switch over to Prestige when they went to Prestige?
No, I can't get arrested again, man. But now I think things are going to change, and I think it's a whole new upheaval of good things, you know.
How many jokes do you have written down on a Jay London material list?
It's not on how many jokes. It's just taking little categories.
Yeah.
And then trying to link them. You know The Good Earth by Pearl S. Buck?
No.
Well, there's a lot of knitting done. I do a lot of knitting. So when I knit, I try to... It's very hard as you progress into this life where you creatively become a little arid, dried up. I'm a little dried up, Carlos. That's all. A little dried up.
What was your favorite joke that you wrote?
Well, Louis C.K., I go back to him because he remembered me from New York so many years later. When I point to the floor and I go, "This is my stepladder. I never knew my real ladder." And I do this whole thing a bit about that stood and that helped that Bed Bath and Beyond, which I got from driving a cab. I used to drive in a cab in New York. Or one time I was by Vanderbilt by Grand Central and it said "Stationery Store Moving." And that was the joke right within itself. How could you see a stationary store moving? So a lot of people get me. How are you accepted? Because of your all-American vivaciousness, you must do very well.
Yeah.
I'm for a certain...
I like the joke you do. You didn't do the joke when you say, I worked at the Bath and Beyond. I used to work at the Beyond part.
Beyond department. People ask me, where's the Bath section? I tell them it's beyond me. That's the whole... But,
then the mountain climber.
Do mountain climbers know when they're over the hill? That's idiotic. My mother tells me I write like a 4-year-old. I swear. Yeah.
So you have brothers and sisters back home?
I got two beautiful sisters and a brother. Yeah, and I had a brother, God rest his soul, we were stepbrothers. But right over here, right across the street from Raleigh, he had his own collectible store here called Haywire.
Haywire.
So the Paramount and Haywire would rent out, you know, artifacts or clothing or whatever. Yeah, so... A lot of memories. Yeah, that's my very small family. It's amazing, you know, how the family becomes smaller. I don't want to be kind of depressed the crowd here. How much time more do we have? small family, but good family. Solid mom. My mom just turned 93. Is going to be turning 93 years old. So,
where are you from originally, Jay? Are you from Queens?
Bronx, New York.
The Bronx. You're from the Bronx.
Yeah. Born in Bronx Hospital, 149th and 3rd, right near Yankee Stadium.
So you're a Yankee fan?
I was always a Giants fan. you know, after, well, they were the Polo Grounds where they played, then they moved to San Francisco. But as a little boy, I always, you know, went for Orlando Cepeda.
Yeah.
Willie Mays, Willie Kirkland, Johnny Antonelli, you know, I'm going way back, but Mike McCormick, and that's it. Yeah, I'm a real New Yorker, I guess.
And Lefty kinda, something, right?
Well, that's Lefty Gomez.
Lefty Gomez.
But that's in the 30s.
In the 40s.
It's in the Beyond Department.
In the Beyond Department. But I love it. Since I used to play baseball, I put a little joke, that I was such a pathetic hitter that the bat used to choke up on me. See, I didn't choke up on the bat. The bat choked up on me. So, yeah, a lot of, yeah. I used to go to McCoon's Dam Park and run track at the old Yankee Stadium. So, I guess I was always getting nervous energy out of me, so I'd always run or whatever.
When did you start growing the hair?
Well, that's a long time. A long time. I might, you know.
You're an old hippie?
Am I an old hippie? I never was a hippie. I was more of a
stoner?
No, just the opposite. Hey, Joey, you got my money. Hey, Bobby, you got my, you know, a little
a leg breaker.
What's his name? Martino? What's his name? The guy who plays always at the, you don't really see him, at the Left Factory. He has receding hairs from Jersey.
Oh, Mike Marino, get the bat.
I'm really Mike Marino with long hair in a way, at one time.
Yeah.
But not anymore. But I grew up with Shylocks. And
Shylocks?
Tough guys. Hard to believe. Yeah, that was another aspect of me that was there. But I don't want to tell you.
Where'd you go to school, Jay? The School of Hard Knocks.
I'm not here to look. You know, I had to go to a few schools because I had issues. So
you were like a little boxer growing up to the kid, like a tough kid?
No.
You didn't take no bullshit?
No, just the opposite.
You were bullied.
Yeah. I don't want to give sad stories. As a kid, they thought I had leukemia.
What?
And I bloated up, and I had to have marrow taken out, whatever, but it was a thing called purpura, which is a hemorrhaging of the corpuscles. So when I went back to school as a 14-year-old, I would be chopped down for my ethnicity and whatever, and then I started to work out. So it all came from being beaten up a lot and lambasted for the originality of what I am. So I've gone through that, and that's when I became a little, you know, I got that little edge or whatever, you know, from being picked on and beaten up and whatever else you want to call it.
What'd they call you?
Oh, I've been called from a half a fag.
Very East Coast, huh?
A half a fag, Jew boy. Taken around a certain, I don't want to give these. It was an atrocity, you know, and it always stayed with me, and plus being, you know, I got stuck up a few times and this and that, and you know, and through all my ha ha ha, you know, there's another little ha ha ha.
Wow, Bronx was tough in them days.
I was in Bronx. I was Queens.
Man. Oh, Queens was tough.
I was born in the Bronx and stayed with my grandmother for years, and then I moved to my parents in Whitestone, Flushing, Queens. This all happened in Flushing, Queens, man.
That's back when New York was busy with crime and all
late
that shit.
60s, man. And, you know, I was.
So you were attracted as a cab driver to the hip hop movement, huh?
Like I said, I met Steve Brown, man, and for some reason I just was always lyrically involved. I tried to become lyrically involved with a group called the Shangri-Las. You never heard of them?
Yeah, the Shangri-Las.
I was 14 years old trying to write for Buddha Records, and at the time they had a song called Walking in the Sand.
Walking in the Sand.
Yeah, and try to become a lyricist for them and whatever. But, yeah, it's been a nice road, a vast. And, I don't know where I am right now with this, meaning the comedy, not to disrespect it, but we'll see.
Yeah.
I believe in epiphanies, too.
Yeah.
Breakthroughs. Not breakdowns, breakthroughs.
You're very rhythmic, though. Is that your love for music and all that stuff? Does it go
hand
with the comedy, or how do you work it? Just your essence?
Just me. I sense and I feel. Shamanism, too. Native American smelling and feeling and sensing. Please.
So what do you do every morning? Do you meditate, exercise? How do you stay in shape?
Shape. I was doing swimming, and the worst. And I go up to Glass Hill Park, man, you know. And you got these professional swimmers. They do. I'm doing a half a lap. They're on a second lap. So I try to do laps to keep the weight down. But, you know, I got to get back into that. And a little weights, and that's about it. Nothing more than that.
You still write new material?
Hardest thing to do these days is to come up with ideas.
Yeah.
I'm finding out I'm much funnier, being myself. Mm-hmm. And I, as Kevin Nealon once said to me, who's the real Jay London? You know, without covering behind the one-liners. So I just have to be myself, and I think I could be finally a headliner.
Yeah.
Just being myself, and that's the hardest thing.
When was the last time you did an hour?
Gee. I don't know. I don't even know. I like to do hit and runs. Dash and grab. 18 minutes, 20 minutes, 25, good night.
Dash
and grab. Nice to see you. Good luck.
15 minutes, like tight, huh?
Not even. There's material that I'm so stubborn with my material that, I refuse to let it go. I'll put it on a library, on a shelf somewhere.
Yeah, we invited you on the show because we one of our episodes, we mentioned you on an episode, and Rodrigo imitated you. And then people say, oh, I think I know that guy. What do him, bro?
How you guys doing, ladies and gentlemen? Jay London. Because one time we were rolling when you had the Montero, and Felipe got all excited and he seen you on.
Yeah, we saw you.
What's up, Jay London? You need a ride or what, dog? And he's all, are you going to the valley?
Yeah, we saw you in Los Feliz.
Oh, was I taking a bus?
No, you were going somewhere in a hurry. You were wearing white jeans and a black T-shirt.
Yeah.
And I think we
did. Give you a ride?
Yeah, we did.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Because before that, we had seen you driving a white truck.
Never drove a truck in my life.
No?
No, it was always a shoddy looking car that may have looked like a truck.
Or a white car.
You had like a big brown car, right?
I had a brown car.
Yeah, I remember that car.
That, of course, the engine went on that.
Did you ever, when you first started off at the Comedy Store, go party with the greats like Sam Kinison or?
Never met him. God rest his soul. Never.
Oh, you came in 99. He was already dead.
Yeah. 2000. I never met any of them. Really.
How about Freddie Soto?
Oh, man, it still bothers me today.
Yeah, it was sad, huh?
I was, and with his vivacious wife there and having a kid and blah, and Marilyn Martinez.
R.I.P. Man.
I miss her.
I went to her wake. Marilyn Martinez.
Marilyn.
Yeah.
In Colorado?
No, it was in it was at the Silver Lake.
Oh, yeah, well, she lived right there. I used to go with her husband, Dave.
He passed away too.
So I remember a lot of them. I remember the beautiful Brian Holtzman. Don't see him around no more.
No, what happened to him?
I don't know. Did he vacate?
Every now and again he shows up at the Comedy Store, but very rarely.
Or he does the Laugh Factory at 1 a.m.
Yeah, and that guy I thought was the next Brother Theodore. I don't know if you're familiarized with Brother Theodore.
No.
Nah.
He was a madman who was from Hungary, who would wear a turtleneck, all black, and go on these rants. It's worth looking up Brother Theodore, and I thought he was the second coming of Brother Theodore.
A lot of the stuff that Brian Holtzman did back then, everybody does it now.
Oh, yeah.
Like, he was before his time. Like, he would do a joke right after the plane crash. He goes, he opened up with, I hear Delta is hiring. Yeah. And then he'll go like this. You know what? Fuck that, man. I don't want to sit next to a black box like all these fucking hacks. They want to sit next to the black box on a plane. I want to sit next to a fucking baby. Yeah.
He was intense, man. And
I thought
he always pushed the envelope. And he was one of the healthy subjects who I think had the validity to push that envelope because it was just as in. Just improv and whatever else. It was great.
You ever hung out with Brian Holtzman a lot?
Different off the stage. A lot of, he was an intense guy, and but a loving guy.
Yeah, it's funny. Like, everything you saw on stage was nothing what he was like off stage.
He was a gentleman off stage.
Because every time off stage, Felipe Esparza, how are you, man? Give me a big hug. Oh, I wish I could be like you, but I got this job at the airport. I can't leave it.
And I called you Carlos 10 minutes ago.
Yeah, yeah. I noticed that. I'm just like, I'm
Felipe, I'm sorry. Got hit in the head too many times.
It's all right, man.
Yes.
Used to be a sparring partner.
Bronx Bomber here.
You're a big guy. Big
260.
Man. It hurt somebody.
I've been getting up every morning doing push-ups.
That's what's up, dog.
Are you looking to sculpture your body?
I'm trying to do something.
It can be done, man. Swimming, man.
Yeah, man. I did a lot of bodyboarding.
Yeah.
What's the story, man, like at the Comedy Store with these guys that keep going up on stage after all these years, like no matter what mitts he puts them up, like that guy Robert Williams Abadaya.
Right. What about it?
What's him? What was he? Where did he come from? Did you know him? Was he already here when you got here?
Well, you know, somebody got really insulting with me, and they thought we were brothers.
Oh, really?
You know, and whatever. You know, I
did you give him the old one too?
No. But I always liked him because, you know, he'd wear
a little crazy
run in the back and this and that. But I always thought he was good for that comedic environment. You know, and a lot of them, I don't want to mention names, but she had a hub of negative types that maybe had a jewel there. Everybody has a nugget somewhere.
Yeah.
So I'm glad that she did that and allowed that. And then, you know, because that wouldn't work any other club.
No. Robert Williams, but that wouldn't go with the Laugh Factory.
Just
at
there.
The Improv.
Late at night.
Yeah. And I
Professor.
And I respect those guys. I mean, I'm glad they're part of that makeup, you know, foundation. Yeah.
How long have you been going there now? 20 years?
Who?
More, huh? Robert Williams, Abadiah.
Oh, yeah, I know. I believe he's been there, you know, for a good 20, 25 years.
Since they opened, huh?
Since Sammy Shore used to run the halls.
Yeah, but when I see him, I smile to myself. I'm saying, glad. I'm good. Good for him. Because so many do, you know, a lot of people have talent, but they just don't know how to scrutinize it. You know, I'm not a talent agent, but I see jewels here and there, people, comedic jewels, that should be exposed. Please.
Did you see a lot of party when you got there? Like they say, like they exaggerate. Why do people always say that? Like, I know people, some comedians don't even go to the comedy store, right? You heard them say, "Oh, it's too dark."
The energy there
is bad. But I never felt no bad energy. I know if I want drugs, I know where to find it.
Yeah, I mean, it, I'm not saying it's abundant, but at one time you're gonna go. You know, if you're smoking the herb, that's all genteel, and that's the way it should remain. You know, with all guys that you know they go in the back and smoke there, and not that I'm a great imbiber at times, but I had this fellow one time, and it's a cardinal sin. You know, you're supposed to get stoned before you go on because you're really cheating your audience and blah blah blah. And this fellow gave me a hit of this thing called amber glass.
Oh shit.
And it's compressed
hydroweed.
Whatever. And I use another Yiddish word I got for kakta. Nuts. I started to laugh hysterical as I got on stage for no reason and whatever. But it was always a surplus of that going on. The good old American hippie style, you know, way of drug usage.
So you never touched this stuff growing up? Marijuana?
What?
Drugs.
In fact, my whole family's drug related. man, yo, I you know, when I'm gonna sound like this is an inane meeting. I've had my trials and tribulations.
Heroin.
You know, all the people. I can tell you a story about something that is maybe dark, but taught me a lesson. I used to have friends that down on the Lower East Side, heroin was a very big deal. Williamsburg, because you go
Williamsburg.
You go from Williamsburg, Brooklyn.
That's where my wife got her weed at.
Really, and you go right over the bridge, and you're right in Manhattan. You're on First Avenue, you know, on the Lower East Side, Delancey Street, and this and that. So, one time I used to know this guy. We kind of grew up together and all, and he was a heroin addict. In fact, as soon as he came out on parole violation, he was in Sing Sing. Right away, they were flocking downtown, but I was always this nah. But then he became a repeat offender on short term parole violation, so I had the audacity at that time they had a thing called wafers, methadone wafers, which is 40 milligrams, and I had the audacity to sneak this contraband into Sing Sing. Of state penitentiary, and then I said to myself, going back on the Croton line back into New York, I went, nah, I ain't doing this. What am I, a mule here? And I thought it out because I was just trying to be compassionate.
Yeah.
So my days with you know that kind of opiate and all that, nah, never. I have no methadone, no nothing. I went the opposite. I went the methadone where you're supposed to get off heroin. From methadone, looked like I was trying to get on heroin. You know, but no, that kill you. You know, take 34, you OD, get nauseous, sick, flop somewhere.
So were you like a straight A student growing up? You were a smart kid?
No, as I said earlier, I went to because of being confrontational, because of being called certain names. Again, 14, I told you I was sick. So then I went to about four different high schools to graduate. I ended up graduating from Charles Evan Hughes, 18th Street, 9th Avenue in Chelsea, Manhattan. I used to have a lot of fights with minorities and all. Yeah, yeah. Because of the early experiences. Chip on my shoulder, so to say.
So you were there like when they shot that movie, The Warriors?
Well, I could tell you something about Eric Estrada.
Yeah.
Do tell.
You know, at one time, I was, they did a movie called Crossing the Switchblade, which is father this group in St. Louis that helped people coming out of youth correctional centers and that. And I doubled for him, Eric Estrada. I see him, I swear, and I see him at Air Alaska at Burbank Airport. And I go like this. He's a big dude. And I said, hey, Eric, hey, Eric, do you know that I doubled for you in Crossing the Switchblade with Pat Boone and Dom Murray? You got to bring that up? He had like, he flared up, man.
He flared up. There you go, Eric, acting that's like true. A Puerto Rican.
Yeah. You gotta bring that up? Yeah. So what was your question? I forgot the question.
About the Warriors movie.
No, but I remember Crossing the Switchblade very well. That's the truth, yeah. Eric Estrada. He's still doing infomercials. I think he was a soap opera star in Mexico or
something. Yeah, I went to a gifting suite. Have you been to those?
No.
Where they invite you and they give you a bunch of free stuff?
Never.
Horrible stuff, right? Man, they were giving away, like, sometimes, I think like 10 years ago, they would invite actors or known celebrities to receive free gifts, like a gift bag full of nice things.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And you take a photo in front of it.
Yeah.
I went this year, man, it was crap. I mean, crap. Like, they had vaporizers that were full of vitamins, but Eric Estrada took a photo with everything there.
Every product.
Every product there.
Why?
I don't know, because maybe he wants to get another infomercial out of it. But yeah, I skipped this. I went home.
Well, I believe he also married Vidal Sassoon.
Oh, yeah?
And he married a very famous, you know Vidal Sassoon?
Yeah. I was going to say the bottle, the shampoo bottle.
Yeah, the woman.
The air,
yeah,
whatever.
Yeah, I think so. He came into money.
Sassoon.
Were you brought up Jewish, Jay?
Jewish,
Bar mitzvah.
Well, I you should see how my father had to bribe people under the table. The rabbi. Excuse me, I was ready to curse. Just to get me, you know, bar mitzvah at 13 with a record. I couldn't even read the Hebrews. They gave me a record to go up to Cantor. So, yeah, I had that. And, I was a...
You couldn't remember what you had to read?
I was ornery at the age of... when you graduate, when you're 16, to become a man. And I got thrown out of that too.
So, what were you doing? You had to read. You were faking it.
No. The record is Cantor. I don't know his name. God rest his soul. Cantor. A lot of Cantor Grossman said, "Here, you'll learn." And this said, so I try to take the record and then put it in English, like Baruch, whatever. And so this way, I was fluid about it.
So they had to bribe. So your dad had to bribe the rabbi, huh? That you in.
Yeah, he paid. I'm sure he paid under the table.
You were unorthodox, Jay.
Yeah, unorthodox Jew from, that was, again, Flushing, Queens, Garden Jewish Center.
Yeah. So you play sports? You say you were in track?
I used to go to Rutgers at Yankee Stadium and do running broad jump. Handball in the Bronx. The black ball, you know, a lot of, at that time was very
high. Le You know how to play good handball?
Who?
You.
Well, I used to have tremendous calluses here. And in the West Bronx in Aqueduct Park, which was at that time an all-Irish neighborhood, mass would be over at 1:12, whatever, and everybody would get their beer. And I would play even as a 12, 13-year-old. So I've always been sports.
Handball's big when I grew up.
Yeah.
They
black ball?
Black ball, yeah. It was a little ball.
Yeah.
A little hard, ball, void, hard. A little hard ball.
Yeah, yeah.
That bounces it, and people would hit it with their palm.
Yeah.
They would play at the parks, all the gangsters. Like, we have parks dedicated just for that.
Still today?
Yeah, in Hollenbeck Junior High School, we have, like, 5 walls.
Really?
I think my son loves playing that.
Yeah, did you ever see some of them, they whip it?
Oh, dude, they whip it hard.
Mad technique.
Yeah.
I don't know how they play it. I don't know how that sport came perfect. In the neighborhood, though, but people played a lot.
Yeah. I loved...
You still play it?
Nah, I can't move. I can't move. I play wiffle ball a little bit.
Yeah.
A little wiffle ball. Now, it's, you know, I'm restricted.
And well, where were you in the 80s, though? Like in the early 80s when the Beastie
Killing
Boys?
Killing myself softly. That's where I was. That's where I was in the 80s. Where was I in the 80s? I told you. I became with my music. I told you. The Larry Harlows. Do you know Larry Harlow?
Yeah. No.
Well, not the Larry Harlow. They used to play a place called the Paradise Garage. And that's where all these groups, Jelly Benitez, Jelly Bean Benitez, and he was a mixologist. And that's when Sylvester, you know Sylvester? He's the first transvestite to have a crossover underground disco-oriented.
Club hit?
Million seller, Sylvester. So, what was it? I'm sorry, what was the question?
How many times did they let you in Studio 69?
Studio 69. You know, I drove a cab in those years, man. And I just couldn't wait to just dump them off and, you know, move on because... The crowd was off. I mean, the
so you saw the scene. You would drop people off there.
Oh yeah, man.
How was it, bro? Like that line, beautiful people.
It was around the corner, or you'd go to these other the Limelight. Excuse me, in like in Chelsea and all these clubs were happening. That's later, but it was a bustling time of the 80s. Yeah, a very bustling.
That was back in the days before they cleaned it up, right? Before Rudy Giuliani made it Disneyland.
Well, when he became mayor,
they had the peep shows before.
Well, he just took 42nd Street and regentrified that area. Took Soho, regentrified that area because at that time there were guys that were squeegee guys that would annoy you cleaning your windows and quality of life crimes. And he just what a mayor, excellent mayor.
Yeah. I remember when I first went there, there was still peepholes. Peep shows in that area?
Well, you know, that's been going on. I thought that was going through the 70s. And then you had crack.
Yeah, crack.
Kind of devastated all those areas, too, because you get strong-arm robberies. The Improv, I believe, closed under the auspices of crack on 44th and 9th Avenue because it became bad.
So the original Improv used to be, it was already a bad neighborhood, then it got worse?
No, it was a neighborhood that, you know, you're coming right out of the Holland Tunnel, the one on 39th there. And, you know, you're on the west side. You're in Chelsea, or you're not Chelsea, or you're in Hell's Kitchen, which had its old grouping of people. And then it just, you saw the demise of it, you know, and they were the first to, his wife, Silva Friedman.
Yes, the old lady.
Had a club called Shutters.
Shutters.
As soon as you came out of the tunnel. So she tried to keep the name alive there. But it went. And Danny Aiello used to be in earlier years a bouncer.
A doorman, right?
Yeah, doorman bouncer.
So that area of where the Improv used to be, like crack just destroyed that neighborhood?
That whole area, man. You had that on the west side, on the east side of the 50s. You had, excuse me, male prostitutes who ruined that whole area. It got ruined real quick, too. Like cancer. Like a cancer, yeah. Let's leave on a depressing note. Go ahead.
That's crazy, dude.
Yeah, man. Yeah. And I saw it all because I drove a cab.
So when you decided to drive a cab, was it because you saw a taxi driver?
No. I knew I should have continued in some ways some kind of schooling, but I always liked the freedom of... I always had, not problems, but authoritative figureheads. Hey, you.
What are you doing here?
Boss. Like, did you punch, taking, I guess, orders. Excuse me. So I said cabbing is the best way for me. I can set my own hours, and I used to work the dead shift. But I never got like Robert De Niro to that point. In fact, I'll tell you how I got, how at the end I knew it was time to go. Because I used to be a very accommodating. I used to say years ago, hi, how you doing? Where are you going? Oh, that's nice. Then I cut it down to where to. Then I cut it down. I became just so abrasive to the public. I just, you know, because it's about, you know, because you had to lease the cab, rent it. Well, you have to get their money and then get your money, and plus pay for gas. So it became too stressful.
What did it cost to lease a cab back then?
About $80,
$90. A day?
Yeah. And then you have to get there 15, 20. It's $110 before you see anything. It takes 6 hours, man, just to make. And you get, we're going to work another eight. You know, it tear you down. Plus, you end up with urinary problems because your kidneys are bouncing, you know, whatever. But I appreciated it.
So $80 to $90 to rent a cab, and yeah, then you got to pay them that. Then you got to pay them $90.
$90 at the end of the shift, plus your gas. You have to pay for gas too.
Yeah. So whatever you make after that is yours.
Yeah. So I would make their $110, and I walk away with $30. I'm tired. They would kill. They're still in business.
Sounds like you were born to be a comedian.
Yeah. They're still in business. Yeah. It's a different you, because everybody now, you know, a medallion today is worth $300,000. You know,
so. What do you think it costs now to rent a cab and drive it?
We've got to be up to about 115 plus gas. You know, forget it. It's
well, you're gonna be hustling now.
Hustling, not getting out of the cab, to the point where even if you're holding in, you know, I hate to say the word urine, but you know, if you got a good call, you know, hold it in. That's it. Became a despo. Or cutting people up just to get a fare.
You ever stole fare from people?
No, I try to be the gentleman I am. I tell you this, there used to be a Eastside Airport years ago on First Avenue. And at that time, you would take people from there and take them to LaGuardia. So me, I would try to get four people. Oh, you go, LaGuardia, LaGuardia, LaGuardia. Of course I got written up for that. You're not supposed to do that. And charge $10 a head. You know, U.S. Open, try to get five people back into New York. So I would hustle, but in a nice way. I was never cutthroat, you know. Nice, try to be nice.
So you would charge five people individually instead of with
four
one?
Four people, because only four can get in. Oh. So $20 a head, is that good with you? And this is at the U.S. Open, you know, before it became so security enhanced. And the police everywhere, and I would go, and they would be, oh, we're going into the city, and I'd say, oh, that'd be $20. Oh, that's fine. And then I try to get somebody else and try to get four people. That's $80, man. You know, that's paying like for my whole night.
The whole night, and yeah. 30 more bucks, you quit.
That's called hustling. But I got written up by the Taxi Limousine Commission, and that was that.
Snitches.
Did anybody ever have sex in the back of your cab?
I got. How about this? The guy wanted to rent out.
What?
Wanted to rent out the back seat if I left the cab. Yeah, there's been little semi-rendezvous, but nothing that graphic.
Rendezvous.
What did that cost for you to leave?
I don't know, but the guy said, do you mind if I leave there? Do you have any towels in this cab? Do I have any towels in this cab?
No fucking hotel.
I got a little excited by that, but there's been, I'm sure, a little of that. Yeah.
Did anybody try to mug you when you were driving?
I got stuck up twice in cab companies, man.
Yeah.
One time, a lot of cab drivers are despots, so they gamble. They play dice and whatever. And they were gambling after the shift. And these three dudes came in, one with Cabana, in a hot August day, with Cabana outfit, you know, shorts and all. Hit the floor. I said, hit the floor. And the dispatcher was cowering. I thought they were going to kill this guy. He was really a cop who was moonlighting. Got stuck up like that. Then I got stuck up where they took a sort of shotgun and shot into the ceiling on Halloween. On Halloween with a mask. And one of them didn't have a mask, and they were pasty.
Boo.
Pasty, no, meaning scary in their own way, because they were amateurish. And one I thought was on heroin. He's like this. I went, oy. The guys that said hit the floor, I wasn't that afraid of, but these dudes I was afraid of. So I've been stuck up a few times, yeah. Mm. Yeah. Never shot at, but the gun to my head and all that. Yeah.
So you used to work. You ever work for gangsters in New York?
No. I could. I'll tell you a beautiful story because I can't let the story out. You know Pebbles?
Pebbles?
Yeah. She does a VA hospital out down here over in Westwood. I went this Wednesday to do it, and this lady with this other lady yells out, "I can't believe it!" In between the show, yelling, blurting out. You look like Vincent the Chin Gigante. You know that?
Yeah, no, the mobster from the Genovese family.
Yeah, he used to walk around with a bathrobe.
With a bathrobe, yeah.
He says, "I can't believe it." And who's sitting next to her is Henry Hill's first wife, not the one who portrayed in
Yeah, Karen.
Not Karen. His
first
wife.
Before that one.
Yeah.
Before that. And it was just to hear that because I knew offshoots growing up of people of that ilk, but you know, it's not to the level of, you know, having meetings,
yeah,
or taking on social clubs or going to to play bocce ball in a very Italian oriented area, social clubs. No, but I knew if I could, you know, on a family level, I don't want to mention family, a little low-life family member there, siphon, take a lot, forging, jumping off and this and that. So I told my friend, I could say, God rest his soul, who may his family affiliated in some way, I'm not going to say what. So I said to him, look, I just want to just go down to this person's job, not him, an affiliate, and just because of the atrocity he committed against the family, we're talking about $250,000, $300,000, and not paying back a dime, and elderly abuse. And you know what he said to me? I said, could you do that for me? You can't do that. He's your brother. Or whatever. You got to love your family. He's your brother. But I wanted to see that through, I mean, just to grab this dude. So I did have, I guess, affiliates that but they you know, because you might owe them, as that old folklore. You know, if you do for me, you know. But there was one time I wanted to use those powers to just rifle somebody's pockets, meaning, you know, like, you don't do that. And that's it. But I grew up with that allurement, but it wasn't me. And the fellow that I used to visit up in Sing Sing, his father was the head of a big union.
Oh, yeah?
You know, because a lot of, and I'm not here to downgrade anybody, a lot of people in the 70s and 80s, they may have gone to military school, because a lot of them did, their sons and offspring, but them drugs ate their offspring up. They weren't prepared for what they saw.
Drugs hit hard on New York, huh?
At that time, it took people who were from very promising backgrounds of Italian, Irish, whatever heritage, and man, that floated in there, and you know, everybody just migrated, and families and the elders were totally taken aback by the total allurement of being in a nice middle class to upper class neighborhood, and how this infiltrated it. So, yeah.
You ever thought about doing a Jay London one-man show?
See, and when I did Louis C.K.'s, I got a problem with that. See, I want to do a one-man show. You know what my problem is? I'm afraid somebody else is going to show up.
I'm the real Jay London. No, you're not.
Yeah. No, I did do a one-man show. You know, but I'm trying to work on a book now in my life and this and that, and just keep it going.
Hell yeah.
Yeah, keep it going. I'm talking a lot here, but
it's all good.
It's your interview. This is Jay London's story.
Right. It's an interview.
We're here for Jay London. Thank you.
Quick question, thank Jay. You mentioned Shylocks earlier. What was your relation to those dudes back in the day?
Well, not the relation, but I saw how they operated. Well, you go to the track a lot, right? I'm just going to go along.
Right, yeah, yeah.
Look. You want to borrow $100? You want to borrow 100?
Yeah, I need 100. Yeah. I need 100.
Look, you give me $20 a week until I get my full 100 back. So you and guys would pay 20 because he wants to give 100 all the time. So I saw those guys work on those levels, the minuscule minor level. But then there's the other level that, you know, that people attack for thousands and they get what you call VIG.
A VIG.
I want my VIG.
What do they mean when people say he got me five? He got me five points in a VIG on 100,000.
So is that,
that's 5,000.
So you're paying like 10%, 15% until I get. I want my money at once. Don't give me dips and dribs and you know all that. But I never really saw any violence. But I heard of violence with ketchup bottles and blah blah blah. Heinz 57 in a restaurant, you know, because they don't like when you lie. You said you're going to be here. Wait, you were supposed to be here.
My mother was sick.
Okay, I got that, but that was 2 weeks ago you told me that. It's got to stop, right? What are you doing? You put down the eye like this. See, I would use a lazy eye and go. In fact, I'm the only Shylock who went bankrupt. Nobody would pay me back. Nobody would pay me. Pay this guy back. Pay him.
You will never see me again.
You will never see me again. I was a Shylock who went bankrupt. But go ahead, because I had no violence in me.
I would pay the VIG to him.
Yeah, And, you know, it's an addiction. Gambling gets to you, man.
You like gambling?
Nah, because I saw what it has done to family members. I saw it's had extracted thousands of dollars. And not too long ago, I went to Santa Anita, and I went for $8, and I went, why? You know, not even to go for $8. You know, it's just it's a joke. I'll play a number here and there, but my gambling is, yeah. There's no addiction there. And you really, it's hard to see the demise of a gambler. You know, because you can, someone who's on a drunkard, you could see the falling down and this and that and everything. But when it comes to gambling, it's a slow process where you start to become disheveled.
Yeah.
In fact, I am looking like a gambler.
But how do the numbers work? How does that work? Where, hey, he's playing the numbers.
Do you want to play? So what do you want? 503 for a dollar?
Yeah.
Okay, so if you win, you get back 250 for the dollar. You know that. So, you know, numbers were taken out by Lotto, you know, the lottery system. It was a big, big business, the numbers.
How do they pick the numbers of the winners, though?
Well, you look at the total mutual handle, of meaning what the racetrack made, and those last three numbers tell you what the number is. So if they spent $3,843,023, so the number would be 023. It's the last three digits of the total mutual handle.
Damn.
Yeah. The total mutual handle from Wall Street?
No, from the racetrack that you play at. Aqueduct Racetrack was a big racetrack in New York, Belmont.
So so just say the people in the Bronx, Queens,
yeah.
Black people. The black numbers.
No, there ain't no black numbers. It's the last three digits. That everybody knew that. If you bought the Daily News, or the Post,
okay,
you look at the mutual handle, how much the people spent, and it's those three numbers that we
always,
remember. Always, never, nothing more.
So, what are you, so? Just say Rodrigo, me, myself, and you're the booker who grabs the numbers.
Yeah,
or you have a runner.
A number taker.
So I just won. I won $5. On 3-2-1 down the board.
Right. Well, it would be combinate. You want that combinated? You want that combinated?
So that's extra money, huh?
No. Combinated. Let's say you're playing 3-2-1. Let's say it comes in 1-2-3. So you would get 1/3, I believe, of what that pays instead of straight. If you hit it for straight, you get full money. You can combinate it. Anyway.
And then the state lottery is over.
It's overrun that hope. There's I don't think there's any more numbers anymore.
Yeah, to the bolita game.
Gone.
Yeah, in Tampa they have bolita. It's like a game with a ball. Like it's like a Cuban lotto.
Yeah, it's the original one.
And,
right?
And it keeps you going, especially for people who are.
They play every day, huh?
You need
a dollar here, a dollar there,
a dollar action, and you got $500 in your pocket. To, you know, and they pay you. They don't want to. They don't want to mess their rep up. You know, so they'll pay you.
Except the guys who don't pay, they get dealt with, huh? Break an arm.
You got to pay it. No. That's the deal with, I guess, that other side. I don't know what I don't know that other side because I never worked for numbers. But that was silver. What do you want today? They would go to all cab companies and after it ended, after Lotto. But what's your number? You know, and people, $5 on a number. I had a dream, $10 on a number.
I saw it in a book.
Yeah, that's right. That's how people.
So what you got going on next, man? What's the future for Jay London, man? Where can people go look for you, like the listeners?
Let's see what I'm doing next here. I'm gonna go back because my mother's birthday is coming up, and I'm hopefully have gigs waiting for me in New York and meet Phil Selman. He's always been nice. What am I doing? I'm gonna be hosting and judging whatever. What's his name? Dante's Best Funniest Comedy and Studio, whatever there. And again, it's try to get back to the work ethic.
You're on Twitter, Instagram?
I have no social media skills, so I have somebody who mans it for me.
But you do have one.
I do.
Jay London on Instagram.
Instagram?
Yeah, or Twitter.
Something on that order. I hate to sound so idiotic.
A webpage.
I have a website.
Yes.
And I believe other things. Other things.
Is it jlondon.com or
jlondonlive.com
how people,
on YouTube?
How can people get a hold of you if they want to hire you or for a featured act or whatever?
Basically on jlondonlive.com.
I think it'd be perfect, man. We should do a show together when I'm at the Ice House or somewhere.
Yeah,
You should do a 15 minutes, get out, freak everybody out.
I can't get arrested there, but they love me there when I'm there, you know?
Yeah, I'll make it happen.
Yeah.
You and I and Rodrigo right here.
And you know what? Yeah, please, by all means. And you know what's ironic, man? Because I guess it's coming down to its time of gun. I saw you on a car commercial.
Yeah. Right? Yeah, Honda.
Right. 15 years ago, when I said, you know what, maybe try to sell commercial advertising for ideas and using myself and all, and then I see you there. You know, in a different aspect, but I'm just saying that it's amazing. It's just amazing how time and how you have to jump on the creative right away. You can't put it somewhere. You have to do it. Not that I'm saying you beat me, but I'm just saying it's amazing. The look and whatever, that's all. And I'm saying, wow, that's good. Good for him.
Yeah,
that's
sometimes I Google myself and your photo shows up.
There you go.
I said Felipe Esparza and Jay London shows up with a little coat.
There you go.
Do people ever stop you and go, hey, I saw you in a Honda commercial?
No, but I have been stopped for you maybe once or twice. Take that stop.
Where's the mole?
Take it for you.
Hell yeah.
That's a compliment.
I think it'd be hilarious, man, to do the comedy, for you to do a show with us.
Are you close with the proprietors there?
Yeah. His show. He can choose whoever. I could choose whoever.
Well, yeah, man. Again, it's time for me to, as they say, get real down to the nitty gritty. I kind of feel like, you know, something is on the horizon.
I feel like it too, bro.
For you?
No, for you.
Oh, for me, for you.
For us.
meaning that, it's.
I think people, you're like, you're an awesome comedian, and
so
people need
funny,
to see
dude.
See you in a bigger light, because you're great.
Well, thank you. And I had that with Louis C.K. I did show my chops and all. You know, it's just that I got to get out there and as they say, do it up. You know?
Yeah, because back then we used to watch you a lot at the Comedy Store. I mean, there's a lot of guys that go up there funny, even stars and shit, but you're the one that just always had us on the fucking floor, man.
Yeah.
Just howling in the back.
Yeah, you never, you didn't care how many people were there.
Nothing, dude.
Like, you didn't care that nobody was paying attention. You just hide behind a curtain sometimes, remember?
Yeah, always hiding, cowering. You know, just part of my
thank
act.
You.
And thank you. And
please like me.
Please like me.
Don't walk on me. My parents walked on me.
Yeah, that's right. All of that self-deprecating humor. But I think now I'm again, with ending, maturing in a certain other way where I just let the cat out of the bag.
Jay London, fool, what's up? Take us out with some Jay London material.
Ladies and gentlemen, Jay London.
Oh, quick. You know, I went to a surplus store today, did I tell you?
No.
And they were out of everything. I found out I aroused one thing in woman, suspicion. As a kid, my father would talk about baseball. As a kid, my father would walk into my room dressed like an umpire, and he told me I was out of here. That kind of stuff.
Jay London, people, Google him. Last Comic Standing.
Tell him to take my phone number because I'm not. Could I do that too?
Yeah.
Leave it over there. Only for work, not friendship.
Leave your phone number.
Only for work, not friendship.
Only for work, not friendship.
Yeah. If you want to hire Jay London, this is his number for his the people who handle his work.
Yeah.
What's the number?
323-691-9352.
Jay London, thank you.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
And www.jaylondonlive.com, right?
No, jaylondonlive.com or jaylondongmail or yahoo.com.
Okay.
All the family.
Thank
Yahoo
you.
And the,
What's up, fool? Rodrigo Torres, man, anything to add?
Just chilling, man. It's fucking great to have you, dude. You are a fucking awesome comedian, and you are funny as hell, man.
Thank you.
Just want to say that. Seriously, man.
Thank you, man.
You fucking really make me laugh, dude. Thank
you.
Out of luck.
Oh, don't you have a show coming up also?
Yeah, it's going to be this month, April 11th at the Ice House Stage 2.
Right, it's going to be Saturday. Flaco.
It's going to be, we're going to have the special guests, and we have Mondo and Pops.
All right.
Armando Cosillo and Pops Cosillo and Gracie will be on the show as well.
Put Jay London on the show, bro.
Well, fuck you. That's a special guest. You know what I'm saying?
You want to do the show, Jay London, April 11th?
Yeah, I'm still here in April 11th.
Okay, Jay London.
What's up, fool? We're going to put on the webpage, when we put up this show, a link to all your shows on YouTube so they can go find you and listen
Please.
To you.
Yeah.
And check you out and... we'd love to have you on one of our live shows. Be here. All right, fool. What's up, fool?
What's up, fool? Hit me up on Instagram, Twitter, all that shit.
Thank you, All Things Comedy.
Yeah, man.
Thank you. Thank you.
Oh, dude, that was fucking fantastic, man.
I didn't know you were a Shylock.